Good morning, friends. It is time for Friday with Jim. And surprisingly enough, I'm your host, Jim. Happy to have you with us. Engineering for us today is Kate Brister. Thank you, Kate. And we're happy to have as our guest, Zeddy Nimowell. I always have trouble pronouncing that. Zeddy, thanks for being with us.
Jim, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Zeddy is on the Astoria City Council, and she's also involved in the community store. We'll be talking about both of those things. But before we get on to that, Zeddy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Astoria. Actually spent time here as a child at Coast Community Radio, and went away to college, University of Oregon, studied journalism, and worked in broadcast news before opening my own business, Coffee Girl. Met another entrepreneur who was also in the brewing business, not coffee though, beer, Chris Nemlowell of Fort George. And we've got three lovely children together. I spent 9 years on the Planning Commission for the city, and this is my first year as a city councilor.
Oh, that's quite a transition. Didn't you spend some time on Maui as well?
I did. My father has always lived in Astoria, but my mother did spend some time on Maui when I was in high school, so I went back and forth between Astoria and Maui. And it was 1996 that I returned to Astoria for my senior year, and boy, that was a wet year. And gosh, I gotta say, after experiencing the climate on Maui, I wasn't too thrilled with the rain. But fortunately, that was kind of an anomaly. It hasn't been too wet since then, except for this year, of course, which has beat that record.
Yeah, but we had an incredible summer and early fall this year here.
Yeah, last year, boy, that was phenomenal, wasn't it?
Now, what motivated you to get involved in city government and specifically the city council?
Well, I was a news reporter in Eugene and in Astoria, and the beat that interested me the most was local politics. And so I covered local politics and a lot of land use issues in Eugene and in Astoria. And so I was knowledgeable and fascinated, definitely, by the process. Willis Van Dusen appointed me to Planning Commission, and I accepted. So that's how I got involved. After serving 9 years on the Planning Commission, it seemed that City Council was the next good step. You know, I wanted an opportunity to be a little bit more proactive.
But having three kids, you must lead a fairly busy life.
It is a serious juggling act. But part of the reason why I ran for city council is because I believe very strongly in our democracy, and I wanted to represent a demographic that's not currently represented. The circle of people that I hang out with, people that have little kids, don't go to council meetings generally, unless it's a topic that perhaps affects their neighborhood or a specific issue that they're focused on. And so, you know, it is challenging. But President Obama, when he was giving the State of the Union speech the other night, talked about in order for our democracy to truly survive, we all need to practice in it, not just during elections. And that really got to me. We really need to be active patriots in order for us to have a true democracy. And local politics is the heart of it. We wouldn't want our federal government making all of our local decisions, right? The elected officials here are closest to the people, so I believe strongly in our democracy.
Well, it must be a challenge on the city council. You have such a diverse group of people with different kind of backgrounds and different approaches to city government. How do you meld all that together and get anything done?
Well, I think this first year with us all working together, it's been a little bit of a challenge because there's some new people, including myself, and we're all trying to learn about the city and try to figure out what our role is as a city councilor. You know, how does that role differ from staff? how do we work together as a team? And I think after a year, we're all working much better together, actually. And when we disagree, we can ask each other respectfully why we disagree with one another. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, we had a work session the other day in which we were discussing the Heritage Square library issue. And I needed that. I needed to talk to my team and find out their differing viewpoints, because sometimes, you know, they've heard from a constituent or thought of something that I haven't thought of. Mm-hmm. And an idea that we can come up with collectively, I believe, will be better than one that I can come up with on my own.
I see. What are some of the real hot issues now facing the city council? You mentioned the Heritage Square. Why don't you expand on that a bit?
That is definitely the hottest issue, I would say, partly because it affects so many different arenas in the city. It affects the library, housing, economic development, and it's a tricky situation. The city of Astoria purchased the former Safeway site in 2003 and has kind of been trying to figure out what to do with it ever since then. So we've got that site and we've got the library site. It's been identified by citizens and by the library folks that we need to update our library, that it's not a 21st century library. We've got a need for housing, that a housing study that the city conducted has identified that we need housing of all types, that we basically have a 0% vacancy for rentals right now. So we're trying to solve a lot of different issues. We've got two sites and two problems, that is housing and a library. And it would be nice, I believe, in a perfect world, to be able to solve multiple problems with those issues. But I'm not sure that it's going to work out that way.
So you're talking about a facility on Heritage Square.
I think a library with housing above mm-hmm. on Heritage Square could be a good project if it were affordable. We just came back, our community development director, with some pretty staggering figures on how much that could cost.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that $39 million is the high end. The library component of that would be around $10
million. Hmm.
And if we were to expand or renovate the library in its current location, I'm not really sure yet if that would cost much less than $10 million, but we are investigating that. We need to have a little bit more information so we can really weigh the various options right now. And, you know, you might feel critical that the city council hasn't come up with a decision yet, but this is a big deal that's going to affect the city. You know, our library is 50 years old right now. It's going to affect future generations. So we're not just going to jump into something willy-nilly before we weigh all the options.
And with those kind of numbers, it would seem really difficult to get anything close to affordable housing.
Yes, I think that it would. A mix of housing could be feasible. The city owns the property, and so that gives us leverage to ask for certain things from somebody who could build housing right now. And we have things that we could offer, such as property tax abatement or deferred payments on the property. The difference with this site and other sites that people might talk about for housing is that we actually own it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were to decide to expand the library in its current location, I think that it could be interesting to still look at housing at the Heritage Square site. I think that we could have housing, potentially parking, but then also still provide space for Sunday market along Duane Street. One approach the city has not tried yet on the Heritage Square site is bringing in a private partner. It's been discussed a lot about housing and what that would do for downtown. It provides a 24-hour vitality. It's great for downtown businesses. You look at the types of workers in Astoria. It's service industry, but it's not just service industry. The hospital is the largest employer with over 500 employees. The pay scale there can be higher than the service industry. Those folks need places to live. The Coast Guard also, you know, there's a very high demand. We're talking about two new Coast Guard cutters at the 17th Street dock. And imagine if people who worked on those cutters could live downtown and walk to work. Mm-hmm. You know, this is urban development and it's best in bigger cities where people can live, work, and play without getting in their cars.
Another issue we talked about before going on the air, and I understand that for you it's kind of a sensitive issue, but maybe you could talk a little bit about the relocation of the cell tower from Coxcomb Hill to the proposed location up at Shively.
Sure. I have to tread lightly due to ex parte contact.
Sure.
We have not made a final decision on that yet. That will be at our next council meeting on February 1st. Staff is writing some new findings of fact that we will likely adopt, just given the direction that the council made on Tuesday night's meeting. But it is a really tricky issue because the city has been working for a number of years now to relocate the cell phone tower that is up at Coxcomb Hill right now next to the column to a different place. The city needs to upgrade its emergency communications facilities. So as a city councilor, when I was asked to vacate Nile Street next to Shively Park, when you weigh all of these different issues and it, you know, it really comes down to the heart of one of the most basic important services that the city provides, and that's public safety. You know, public safety won in that case. But this appeal before us the other night, we were not only legislators, but we were land use hearing officials. And I don't want to bore you with the, the land use process can be really tricky.
Well, I spent 7 years on the planning commission.
Okay, so you know. I don't want to bore your listeners, but fact of the matter is that we needed to solely look at a cell tower in Shively Park, a historic landmark. And ultimately, it was a 3-2 vote, and we directed with staff to come up with findings of fact that would support the idea that a cell tower would not be compatible with a historic park. Ron Zilli, in my 10 years serving the city, I have never seen a citizen do that kind of research and homework in preparing his appeal.
He did an amazing job.
He
was on this show a few weeks ago.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He did a fantastic job in researching our code and really coming up with some concrete reasons. Had a lot of merit, I believe, for the appeal.
Mm-hmm. So that, if I understood you correctly, then at your next meeting, you'll make a decision on directing staff to proceed.
We would just be making a final vote. So we had a very lengthy document that got into a lot of code language. And rather than having Rosemary Johnson, special projects manager, rewrite all the findings, which staff were, you know, we're going to have her come back with those findings so that we'll have a chance to review them. And then we would vote on that.
Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, and we're visiting with Zeddy Nemowell. Zeddy, appreciate you being here.
Jim, thank you.
Now, another thing that you're really involved in and have been for several years is the co-op. Now, I understand the co-op has got some plans, some motivation to move to a new location and increase service and stuff like that. I wonder whether you can talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I would love to. So, you know, as a city councilor, that's really my public service, but my job is marketing director of Astoria Co-op Grocery, and I'm very passionate about that. When I was a kid, Josie Pepper was the manager at the co-op when it was by the Colombian Cafe, mm-hmm. and she used to let me use the pricing gun and price products and fold paper bags. So I remember what it used to be like 40 years ago. And the co-op has been changing and evolving since then, and we continue to evolve. It's a really interesting time for food co-ops because conventional retailers are now selling so much natural and organic food that, you know, if you have a community-owned store, you have to get really savvy in going against these global giants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing, and I think we're doing a good job because sales continue to grow to a point in which we do feel like we can expand. And we went through about a year-long process surveying and meeting with our ownership and the community and focus groups. Our board of directors adopted a strategic plan based on that input that does include expansion. So sometime in the next 5 years, if all goes well, we would have a bigger co-op grocery in Astoria. We've just really started the fundraising for that and the planning of the finances for that. Just kind of scratching the surface on sites, but there will be a lot more communication with the community regarding expansion this year.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that there's not room at the current location to expand as needed?
No, there's not. The Providence Heart Clinic that's next door, you know, we've talked to those folks, and they invested a lot of money in their medical facility there, and they are happy there. As nice as it would be to just expand in that current footprint, there are some issues with it. Our board has adopted criteria, which I really think makes sense. We want to be visible from the main drag. We have a trade region of about 40,000 people. So people from all over the Long Beach Peninsula and South County and Astoria shop in Astoria. You know, in order to be visible to those shoppers, we need to be on the main drag. In order to be visible to all of the tourists that come into town, we need to be on the main drag. We need to have substantial parking if we want to be competitive with those bigger retailers. So, you know, we're going to need to have a footprint that's a good size. And ultimately, the site that we're in right now just simply wasn't built to be a grocery store that does the kind of volume that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We've got big trucks coming in to the parking lot there. And, you know, our staff has to wheel that food in on dollies in the rain. And we need a loading dock. You know, we need a place that's meant to be a grocery store and can run efficiently.
Have you looked at some sites, tentative sites that would work for you?
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that there are not very many sites in Astoria that are on the main drag that would be big enough to build a grocery store. They all have issues. You know, there's all constraints. So it's going to be challenging, you know, but I think that we're coming up with a good plan, and we've been talking to enough people that eventually we're going to come up with the perfect site, but we don't have it yet.
Have you got tentative sites that would work?
No, I don't think that we do have a tentative site yet. But like I say, our board is definitely committed to staying in Astoria. We would like to be as close to downtown as possible because we want walkability. So while, you know, maybe the best place for some retailers would be over in the Warrenton complex because there's a lot of buildable land over there and there's a lot of people from the trade region there. We want to be in Astoria. So even though it's a little bit challenging just because there's less land, we're really committed to finding a place here.
Would it have to be as big as the Safeway footprint?
Oh, heck no. That's huge. we've heard some concerns from people, very valid concerns. We want to be a community-sized store. If you've ever been to the co-op in Ashland or Port Townsend, I would say those are, you know, the sizes that I could see our co-op being in. Right now, we only have about 2,000 retail square feet. I could see us having somewhere around 10. So not necessarily, you know, that much larger than we have right now, but we want to have much more fresh meat, a larger deli. You know, right now we've got grab-and-go deli and some soups, but we want to have hot food so that you can come in and get healthy meals prepared for you. We want to expand our produce department. We want to be able to build the market for local food. You know, we want to be able to really, you know, be the go-to place where local farmers can sell to. So we just want to expand those departments, which people really love right now.
It sounds like that would be a challenge financially. Have you been able to put together any kind of fundraising program to help finance this thing?
Yeah, our general manager, Matt Stanley, is really taking the lead on that. He is tapping into every single resource that a food co-op would have to plan financially. We're part of a bigger co-op, the National Co-op Grocers, and they have a lot of business resources. And so we're able to work with advisors and other co-ops that have successfully expanded to get an idea of not only what the costs are, but how to fund it. And a cool thing about co-ops is that they're community owned, and we can do either owner loans or preferred shares, which are a little bit different, in order to raise capital. Now, as you will see in our newsletter that just printed yesterday, quite a lengthy article by our general manager explaining that and how we are going to try to raise over $1 million this year from owners. So instead of putting your money in the bank, investing it in Wall Street, you can invest it in a local homegrown business.
Oh, that sounds pretty. $1 million. That's substantial.
Yes, it is. But you know what? I think we can do it. We kicked off our financial fundraising last fall with our first ever owner equity drive. Our goal was $10,000. We beat that, and then we squashed that, and we came up with $30,000 in owner equity. That was our first opportunity for our owners to really put their money where their mouth was and show their support for a new co-op.
Well, I look forward to seeing the newsletter. Of course, Regina and I are members of the co-op, and so I look forward to seeing that newsletter. That's exciting.
After I get off the air today, I'm going to the Daily Astorian, and I'm picking it up, and then I'm bringing it to Sunset, and they're going to be sorting it and mailing it out, but I'm going to get a copy, and I'm going to drop it off in your mailbox, so you'll be the first one to get it, okay, Jim?
My mailbox at home?
Yeah, I know where you live. You know, I walk by there.
Yes, I know.
Quite a bit.
Well, that's neat. But getting back to city business as your role on the city council, one of the things that the city's kind of been looking at is somehow generating electricity from the dam at the headworks. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, there is an electricity generator up there, but it really just powers the water process itself.
Right.
It's not meant to create any more energy than that. And I'd say, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have up there right now is a seismic study that we're doing of the dam. And looking at what we would do in a seismic event and whether or not the dam would withstand that. So that's kind of interesting, you know, because you get into these issues like cell towers or library or housing, but really the heart of what the city does, I mean, one of the most important things that it does is water. Without it, we really couldn't be here.
Well, water in and water out, yes.
Yeah, you can't forget water out. I mean, Public Works Department is the biggest department within the city. And I know your work in construction, you probably know the ins and outs of that way better than I ever will. But yeah, that's a vital service that we provide.
But it seems to me, just off the top of my head, that the amount of energy that could be generated up there at the headworks with that massive dam, it might be worth exploring.
That's an interesting idea. I'll talk to our public works director about that.
Don't tell him I put you up to it.
I think the cat's already out of the bag.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left, Zeddy. I'm wondering if you've got any issues that you'd like to bring forward.
Oh, my goodness. Well, one exciting thing that I'm working on right now is a parks master plan for the city. Mm-hmm. I'm on the Parks Master Plan Citizen Advisory Committee. And later on this summer, the Parks Master Plan will be complete. We have a rare volunteer from the University of Oregon, a planner named Ian Sisson, yeah. And he is facilitating the Parks Master Planning process along with Parks Director Angela Cosby. So the Parks and Rec Department is a wonderful and challenging department. You know, it offers so many great things, everything from the Aquatic Center to parks, managing historic sites, the cemetery, child care, after school care. As the police chief jokes, it's womb to tomb. You know, it's a full range of services, but it's challenging to pay for. There's only 7 full-time Parks and Rec employees, many other part-time, but definitely for the amount of facilities and grounds that they're managing, it's a shoestring budget. So I'm really hoping out of this Parks Master Plan that we are going to be able to run more efficiently. So there's some properties that have just been forgotten about. Not forgotten about, but, you know, not high priority, and they're just simply not being maintained right now. So we need to figure out what to do with those so that we can focus more on the programs and places that people value the most.
But that Department of Parks and Recreation really doesn't produce much income, so it's funded out of the general fund, is that correct?
Yeah, unfortunately. Almost every single program that Parks and Rec does is subsidized by the taxpayers of Astoria. And that's an interesting problem because there are users from all over the region that tap into our Parks and Rec department. Now, that helps because it does bring in revenue. You know, a lot of the users from the Aquatic Center are from outside of the city, but the money that they bring in helps to fund the Aquatic Center as well.
Mm-hmm. But the Aquatic Center is subsidized by the general fund, even though these outside sources bring income in. Is that correct?
It is. I believe, and you may remember this, I'm not sure if, were you on city council when the Aquatic Center idea was first forming?
Yes.
Okay. Well, as I've heard it, it was never expected to completely fund itself.
No, we did a study and discovered that aquatic centers all over don't pay for themselves. They're all subsidized. And at one point, we took a tour around Oregon and went to a bunch of different aquatic centers, all of which were subsidized.
Right. Well, you know, several years ago, when we heard that our aquatic center might be closing due to lack of funds, we were subsidizing it to the tune of about $500,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Parks Director Angela Cosby has gotten that way down much more to a manageable level. I believe it's about $200,000 a year now. There's only one full-time person there now. There used to be 3. Mm-hmm. And staffing continues to be an issue there. We just had to give the lifeguards a pay raise just because we couldn't find enough lifeguards.
Right. Well, Kate, it looks like we're kind of getting to the end here on Friday with Jim. It's been a real pleasure talking with Zeddy Nemo. Well, Zeddy, thanks for being with us.
That went quick. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah.